The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon, King Features. High temperatures during shipping could make medicine unsafe. Question: when medications lose their potency during shipping, it can be life-threatening. This happened to my son. Sometimes people don't realize how unsafe it is to expose medicines to high temperatures. Others may think, as I did prior to my son ending up in transplant rejection, they wouldn't do it if it weren't safe. I was wrong. Children's liquid oral medications can lose potency very quickly at high temperatures. Other drugs can also become less effective. When I called the mail-order specialty pharmacy about my concerns regarding my son's immune-suppressing medicine being exposed to high heat, they said that they could ship my son's medications to the local pharmacy instead of my house. I asked, will they be shipped in the same hot, non-temperature-controlled trucks in the same way they ship to my doorstep? She said, yes. Shouldn't mail-order pharmacies be required to ship medicine safely for vulnerable patients? Answer: absolutely. The guidelines for medications call for storage at room temperature, 68 to 77 degrees Fahrenheit. During shipping, temporary fluctuations are allowed between 59 and 86 degrees Fahrenheit. To achieve this, shippers would have to use temperature-controlled containers from the point of manufacture, even if it's abroad, to the final customer. There are many instances where there is a breakdown in this process. Question: my husband had a procedure to remove a cyst and was prescribed Levaquin. 2 years later, he had an abdominal aortic aneurysm rupture at home. This 10-centimeter aneurysm appeared out of nowhere, according to his regular doctor, as there had been no signs of it in earlier scans. Could Levaquin have contributed? Answer: it is impossible to tell whether your husband's aneurysm was caused by the fluoroquinolone antibiotic. Swedish researchers have reported an association between FQs and fluoroquinolones and this life-threatening condition within 60 days of treatment, cited in the British Medical Journal March 8, 2018. Whether the risk extends beyond 2 months remains unclear. Can you lose belly fat with a supplement? Question: I have been taking conjugated linoleic acid 3 times a day for several years to combat belly fat. Could you tell me your thoughts on the effectiveness of this supplement? I am 67 years old and weigh 102 pounds, but I still have a good bit of belly fat. Answer: a systematic review of 13 randomized controlled trials comparing CLA, which is conjugated linoleic acid, with placebo for weight control concluded that this supplement has no significant effect on waist circumference, a.k.a. belly fat, cited in critical reviews in Food, Service, and Nutrition Online, April 19, 2018. Such supplements can reduce weight and increase lean body mass in overweight people, but do not by very much. Moreover, research in rats suggests that CLA can increase insulin resistance, which is not a beneficial development. And that's cited in Experimental and Clinical Endocrinology and Diabetes, June 2018. Question: for warts, I've used superglue. What led me to this were the anecdotes reporting success with duct tape and banana peel. It seemed that what they had in common was blocking air to the wart. That's why I thought of cyanoacrylate glue. It goes on easily, doesn't wash off quickly, and is almost invisible. Answer: you didn't tell us whether this glue worked to get rid of your warts. We found one case report in which doctors used surgical glue for a related purpose cited in BMC Gastroenterology, February 14, 2010. However, this doesn't seem to be widely used. Warts are caused by the skin's reaction to human papillomavirus. People have come up with a wide range of home remedies for this problem, including taping banana peel over the wart with the inside of the peel in the skin. Other readers have used cayenne pepper in their socks or the yellow spice turmeric under a bandage for plantar warts. As you've noted, duct tape is a popular treatment, especially for plantar warts, those on the soles of the feet. A review of research found that salicylic acid works as well as liquid nitrogen for children's warts and is less painful, and that's cited in Pediatrics and Child Health, March 2014. This analysis does not show that duct tape is better than placebo in treating warts, and the adhesive can be irritating. We'd love to see a study of your wart-removing approach using super glue. Let's throw a patent-burning party. And this is by Peter Kolchinski from the Wall Street Journal. People used to throw mortgage-burning parties when they paid off their home loans. Flame-fed celebrations marking an inflection point toward independence. It's time to throw a party for Lyrica, Pfizer's Swiss Army knife of a blockbuster drug that treats epilepsy, fibromyalgia, and several neuropathic pain-related ailments. Lyrica's patent expires in December. Once it goes generic, its sales will almost immediately crater as multiple companies begin selling the drug's active ingredients, pregabalin, at steep discounts to Pfizer's brand. As a society, we've nearly paid the mortgage on Lyrica. It was expensive. The FDA originally approved Lyrica in December 2004, and within 3 years, the drug reached $1 billion in sales. In 2017, Lyrica's global sales nudged above $5 billion. Along the way, Pfizer used many pharma tricks, legal and illegal, to boost sales. In 2012, Pfizer won a lawsuit against generics companies that challenged its patents. In 2009, the company paid a record $2.3 billion fine to the Justice Department for improperly marketing Lyrica. Pfizer has also imposed its share of price increases. Lyrica's list price has risen 163% since 2012, although net price increases were lower due to the Byzantine system of drug rebates. Pfizer has even developed a once-daily Lyrica. The regular Lyrica is taken twice daily. Approved in 2017 as Lyrica CR and on patent until 2026, it will be a nice-to-have option for those unfazed by the higher copayment. Because insurance companies saddle patients with high copays, branded drugs like Lyrica are unaffordable to some patients. In the U.S., only 11% of all prescriptions are for branded drugs, the rest for generics. Yet, society can afford to make mortgage payments on these assets for our lasting benefit. At about 1.8% of U.S. gross domestic product, payments for branded drugs are a worthy investment. Health insurance in America should be reformed to pay for innovation and allow patients to afford their prescribed treatments. Lyrica's U.S. patents expire in December but are likely to be extended through June 2019 thanks to a Food and Drug Administration program encouraging companies to demonstrate whether drugs work on children. Until then, Lyrica will help power the biopharma ecosystem with profits, but whether in 2 months or eight, generic Lyrica will appear on the other side of the ledger, becoming an inexpensive societal resource indefinitely. Pfizer says that more than 9 million Americans have been prescribed Lyrica. Over the next several decades, tens of millions more may benefit from generic pregabalin. Lyrica's mortgage burning is a high-profile manifestation of the fundamental contract the biopharmaceutical industry has with America. Society pays for expensive patented drugs in order to incentivize intrinsically risky and expensive research and development, but patents expire. These expensive drugs become inexpensive generics, and society reaps the rewards forever, or until a better drug comes along on which it's worth paying a new mortgage. That's the ideal. For the contract to really work, there are kinks to work out. Namely, some pharma companies go too far in trying to extend their drugs' patent lives, turning justifiable mortgages into unjustifiable rents. Occasionally, they even rebrand older off-patent medications without any innovative upgrades, which may feel like having your house stolen and sold back to you. And insurers offload too much of the cost of innovative patented drugs onto patients through onerous cost-sharing structures. Because human biology is essentially unchanging, many drugs we use today will work as well in a century. Some may even work better with improved diagnostics, delivery technologies, and insights into drug combinations. Thus, the scientific progress we achieve in our lifetimes will also benefit future generations. Generics work just as well and meet the same safety standards as original branded drugs, offer huge cost savings almost immediately, and, with few exceptions, remain inexpensive forever. Cholesterol-lowering statins alone have helped decrease deaths from heart attacks and strokes by 50% throughout the developed world over the last few decades. When Pfizer's patent on the best-selling statin Lipitor yielded to generic atorvastatin, the price quickly dropped by 95% and has remained comparatively negligible. Lyrica is likely to experience a similar fate. Celebrating the end of a drug's patent life and its new life as an extraordinarily inexpensive societal resource reminds us why these drugs are so valuable to patients and physicians in the first place. We should celebrate as a society and an industry when the best drugs cross the generic threshold. Lyrica's mortgage is nearly paid off, and patients will enjoy the benefits of generic pregabalin for decades to come. Let's light the fire and start the party. And Mr. Kolchinsky, the author, is managing director of RA Capital Management, LLC. A breakthrough therapy with a steep bill. And this is Your Health by Samathi Reddy from the Wall Street Journal. Luxturna, that's spelled L-U-X-T-U-R-N-A. Luxturna can improve sight for children and others with a rare eye condition, but costs $850,000. Just 4 years ago, Caspian Soto uses a cane. Just 4 years old, Caspian Soto uses a cane and headlamp to help him see when he walks. He can't see in dark places like aquariums or movie theaters. He's never seen the stars. Caspian was born with a rare inherited eye disorder called Leber, L-E-B-E-R, congenital amaurosis, which results in the progressive deterioration of the retina of the tissue at the back of the eye that detects light and color. He could lose all vision by the time he's a teenager. This month, Caspian became the first patient, one of the first patients in the country to receive a new gene therapy treatment called Luxturna, which his doctors at Oregon Health and Science University believe will improve his vision and prevent further deterioration. The therapy entails inserting a functional gene through harmless virus-like particles into the retinal cells to compensate for the faulty gene causing his disease. It's among the most expensive treatments on the market, with a price tag of $850,000 to treat both eyes, raising questions about how the health system will absorb such treatments as they become more common. Doctors still remember what happened with Uniqure's, that's U-N-I-Q-U-R-E-S, Glybera, a gene therapy treatment for patients with a rare enzyme deficiency the European Union approved in 2012. Last year, the company announced it was dropping the expensive treatment due to lack of demand. The new procedure is the first gene therapy treatment for inherited diseases caused by a single gene to come on the U.S. market. Doctors believe gene-based therapies will become an increasingly common way to treat a range of diseases soon. Treatments for other diseases, including other vision disorders and hemophilia, are now in development. A gene-based treatment called CAR-T genetically modifies a patient's cells so that they will attack cancer cells. Krista Soto, Caspian's mom, says she started the work of getting her husband's health insurance to pay for the treatment in January. It was a really long process, says Ms. Soto, who lives in Portland, Oregon. There was a lot of back and forth with things getting approved, denied, and then approved. After a lot of jumping through hoops, they eventually said they would cover it, she says. She says Spark Therapeutics, the Philadelphia-based manufacturer of Luxturna, offered to pay for the roughly $4,000 in out-of-pocket expenses. Caspian had the surgery on one eye last week and on the second eye recently. The family won't know how it works for about a month. We all have high hopes for the effect of this treatment, says Paul Yang, an assistant professor of ophthalmology at OHSU's KCI Institute and Caspian's doctor. When you catch the patient earlier in life, there's a lot more retinal nerve tissue in the eye that's still available and viable for treatment, so we think that the most bang for the buck is going to be treating early. Caspian is the second patient to receive the treatment at OHSU. David Wilson, director of the KCI Institute, says getting insurance plans to approve the therapy is time-consuming. At OHSU, they set up a five-person team to work on getting insurance to approve the therapy. Payers are, of course, hesitant to agree to a therapy that is such a large dollar amount, Dr. Wilson says. At Bascom Palmer Eye Institute at the University of Miami in Florida, there are five patients waiting to have surgery, including one scheduled to have it soon. Byron Lamb, a professor of ophthalmology at the Institute, says they've treated three patients with Luxturna so far, ages 9, 19, and 37. The two younger patients have had terrific outcomes, he says, while the 37-year-old isn't doing as well. We really can't tell at this point if he has improved, Dr. Lamb says. The Institute for Clinical and Economic Review, an independent nonprofit that conducts cost-effectiveness analyses on new therapies, concluded in a February analysis that Luxturna's price exceeds commonly cited thresholds for cost-effectiveness, in part because its long-term benefits remain unknown. Typically, we look at this form of the healthcare perspective, says ICER Chief Medical Officer David Rind, noting that there is no alternative treatment for many patients with genetic vision disorders. But from a societal perspective, he notes, there is a huge cost. This therapy may well be priced too high, but it would be a hard argument to not deny it to children who are going blind, he says. Spark Therapeutics CEO Jeff Marazzo says Luxturna's clinical trials followed patients for about 4 years and found benefits remained. A phase three clinical trial found that 13 of 20 participants who received Luxturna had maximum possible improvement, as measured by the ability to complete an obstacle course at low light levels compared with a control group. As of the end of June, the company had shipped 18 vials of Luxturna out, enough to treat both eyes for 9 patients. The company wouldn't say how much it has shipped since then. Spark is offering a rebate of up to 20% if the therapy doesn't work in 30 to 90 days, and again, 2.5 years later, Mr. Marazzo says. It is also offering to pay patient out-of-pocket costs, including co-payments. Of course, we're going to continue to push to get patients more access, but we're pleased with the start, he says. Luxturna treats patients with a faulty RPE65 gene, which includes patients with Leber, congenital, amaurosis, and retinitis pigmentosa. The rare Leber congenital amaurosis is one of a group of disorders called inherited retinal diseases, which are caused by roughly 220 different genetic mutations. Pharmaceutical companies are working on similar therapies for other vision disorders caused by single genes. OHSU researchers are working on multiple clinical trials for six other types of inherited retinal dystrophies, Dr. Wilson says. The therapy, the farthest along, is for patients with choroideremia, a condition found primarily in males, which often starts with impaired night vision. This type of gene therapy treatment is going to become very commonplace, so I think setting up a process where patients can get the therapy in an appropriate time frame is really what needs to happen over the next few years, Dr. Wilson says. Now the Harvard Health letter, what new opioid laws mean for pain relief. Dozens of states are cracking down on the amount of prescription painkillers doctors can prescribe. Overdoses of powerful painkillers called opioids kill more than 115 people per day in the United States. More than 42,000 people died from opioids in 2016, five times more than in 1999. The reason? Since several of these powerful painkillers became available in pill form several decades ago, doctors have been prescribing more than patients need. It is estimated that a large part of leftover opioids are diverted to the street, either deliberately or through theft, says Dr. Edgar Ross, senior clinician at the Pain Management Center at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. The misuse of opioids is a risk many states are no longer willing to take. Florida, Michigan, and Tennessee are the latest states, among more than two dozen now, to enact tough new laws on prescriptions for opioids. The rules limit the amounts that medical professionals can prescribe for temporary or acute pain from surgery, injury, or illness. About opioids, doctors often use opioids to treat severe pain after surgery or sudden injuries like broken bones. Opioids also are used to treat chronic pain, such as people with terminal illness like cancer or non-terminal pain conditions like certain long-term back problems. There are legal prescription opioids, such as oxycodone, which is OxyContin, hydrocodone or Vicodin, and fentanyl. There are also illegal opioids, including heroin and illegally manufactured fentanyl. Both legal and illegal opioids are contributing to the epidemic of opioid deaths. The drugs block messages of pain to the brain and decrease the body's perception of discomfort. They may also create a feeling of euphoria. Common side effects include nausea, itching, drowsiness, or constipation. Long-term use comes with the risk of dependence, addiction, overdose, and death. The new laws. While opioid laws vary by state, most exempt the use of opioids for chronic pain, for instance, in cases of long-term illnesses and in palliative or hospice care. For acute pain, the laws typically limit the length of an initial opioid prescription to 7 days, although it's only 3 days in some states like Florida, Kentucky, and Minnesota, unless the doctor can document the need for 7 day supply. Is that enough? For almost all acute pain problems, including after surgery, a week is usually sufficient, says Dr. Ross. In addition, some states now require doctors to do more legwork in order to prescribe opioids. In Florida, for example, physicians and pharmacists have to take courses on opioid prescription, and they must consult a drug database before they can prescribe medication to make sure an individual hasn't already received a prescription. There's a similar law in Massachusetts, but it's not so simple. We have the ability to check the registry to see who else has prescribed it, but it's not integrated with electronic records. If you have someone who needs opioids over the weekend, you can imagine the logistics of that, explains Dr. Dennis Orgel, a surgeon at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. what this means for you. Some of the new opioid laws in Ohio, for example, give doctors the ability to override and refill a prescription for acute pain, but only after you've used up the first prescription. Often you'll have to go back to the doctor's office to pick up the new prescription. Even if you can get a refill over the phone, you'll wind up going to the drugstore more often and making more copays. Doctors can be sanctioned if they don't follow the new laws. That's one reason some people who need opioids, even for chronic pain, aren't getting them. Many doctors now refuse to prescribe any opioids because of the fear of sanctions. I have had several cancer patients whose pain was not well managed because of incorrect perceptions, Dr. Ross says. Will the laws reduce overdoses? We don't have enough evidence yet, but some numbers are encouraging. Massachusetts opioid legislation was signed into law in March of 2016. The overdose death rate then decreased by 8.3% in 2017, the first decrease since the beginning of the opioid epidemic. While it's impossible to say the law caused the decrease, it's certainly a welcome association, says Dr. Karsten Kuppenbinder, an addiction psychiatrist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. What you should do: if you're having surgery, find out in advance what kind of painkiller your doctor will prescribe, how long the prescription will last, and what your options will be if your pain continues. For chronic pain, seek the help of a pain management specialist who can advise you about opioid and non-opioid options, which range from over-the-counter painkillers and physical therapy to acupuncture and cold laser therapy. Depression risks in the medicine cabinet. Are you taking a medication that has depression or suicidal thinking as a potential side effect? One or both risks have been linked to the use of more than 200 prescriptions and over-the-counter pills, including medicines that treat high blood pressure, heartburn, pain, and headaches. The more of these drugs you use, the higher the likelihood that you'll experience depression, suggests a study published in June 2018 in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Working with five surveys conducted over a nine-year period, researchers evaluated health information from 26,192 adults. About 37% of them reported taking such medications. Of individuals taking three or more of the medications with depression as a possible side effect, about 15% reported depression, compared with about 5% in people not using these medications. Even for people already taking an antidepressant, the addition of one or more of the identified medicines was linked to higher rates of depression. This study was based on surveys, so it didn't prove that the medications caused the reported depression. Nonetheless, if you think you're depressed and have symptoms such as apathy, hopelessness, changes in sleep, or eating habits, and persistent fatigue, ask your doctor if any of the medicines you're taking may be responsible. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.